Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and today our guest is Sarah Gill. She is the Senior Legislative Representative with AARP's Governmental Affairs Department. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on. We've had AARP representatives on in the past. It's great. You guys are a great organization, do great work. You know, I always like to start off the show kind of saying, so what's new with the AARP?
The AARP is just working throughout the country to advocate for roughly 38 million members so they can live their best life. And we represent all the 50-plus in many forms and facets. So that includes retirement security, healthcare security, and, you know, all the fun stuff, too, like movies for grown-ups.
That's an important part, and travel and all sorts of other good stuff that's out there. You know, you guys have so much going on in terms of the offerings that you offer individuals and organizations. You know, one of the things that, of course, we're going to be talking about today is legislative trends. And I think it would be really good if you could talk a little bit about some of the legislative trends that affect companies, that affect organizations that you're seeing across the country today.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I should say that I am a state legislative person, so I get the privilege of working with state legislatures across the country. What that means is I get to see trends as they're happening in real time and also kind of see what's coming down the pipeline. I do work a little bit on the federal level, and certainly we have a lot of folks at AARP's D.C. national office who work with Congress as well, and things are happening there too, believe it or not. So some of the trends, I think, which affect business that are the most broad-based and quick-moving right now include, in part, gig workers and talking about employees, their status, how to make sure that those gig workers get benefits that are portable and sufficient, really, across the country, whether that means retirement security, which I'm sure we're going to talk more about later, but also things like paid sick leave, benefits, and salary, those kinds of issues. So state legislatures are really grappling with that across the country. And similarly, Congress is really focusing on retirement security as well. They recently passed legislation which is known in the industry as SECURE, the SECURE Act. And I think some of the things that bill does are really going to impact businesses eventually down the line. One of the interesting pieces of it is that the bill talks about lifetime income and making sure that employees who work for businesses that offer a 401k can understand what their benefits mean in the long term. So it talks about how you can break down your 401k balance, that giant lump sum, hopefully, at the end of the day, into manageable bite-sized pieces that look more like maybe a Social Security check than something that you can look at one large number, maybe it's $100,000, and you're retiring at the age of 65 and trying to figure out what to do with that big number.
You know, one of the challenges that certainly I see, and of course we're going to talk about more trends as we go through this in terms of that specific area, is that while the participation rate seems to be getting better, the challenge becomes in that understanding, that capacity of understanding. We've had guests on that talk about the fact that, hey, you know, it's a lot of legalese. There's a lot of paperwork that comes across with these retirement things. And a lot of people are not necessarily as savvy enough. And HR, in terms of organizations, are, of course, afraid to talk about that because they don't want to provide any suggestions or advice, because obviously it can create a possible risk to the organization. How do you see the AARP's role in helping people that maybe aren't ready to immediately retire, but are working their way up through the process and get that education at the beginning of each employment life cycle?
You are on the money. Absolutely. Education and outreach is a vital part of what we do at AARP. So I work for our nonprofit arm, who not only does legislative advocacy, which we'll talk about later, but also does a lot of just educational work. So we work with financial planners across the country and hold events that help both those who are retired and also the 50-plus or even 40 to 45-plus plan for their future and ask the right questions. And some of those questions that we most often hear include, how much money do I need to save for retirement? If I need to find an expert, how and where do I do that? And should that expert be a fiduciary, or what should the tagline be, right? What am I looking for, a financial planner? And I think the most important thing to your listeners is that we really talk to individuals about how they can take advantage of their employee benefits. Because you're right, the biggest thing is inertia. If we are asking individuals to make a ton of very complex and complicated choices, either when they're hired or along the way, we can expect that they're going to have questions, but beyond that, maybe they won't take any action at all because they just don't know what to do. So education at the employer level, obviously very important, but we think it's really important that nonprofits like AARP engage in that as well.
There is no question that it is so important to an individual's career what they end up doing in terms of retirement. Do you find that the trends nationally, and of course we'll get statewide shortly, but do you find that the trends nationally are better than they ever were? Or is there still really a gap in that understanding and knowledge?
Unfortunately, I really find that not only there remains a gap in the knowledge and retirement security, but actually it might be getting worse. So today, what we know is that about one out of every two households is at risk for a financially insecure retirement. The scary part is that's on the rise. In the 1980s, that number was roughly one out of every three households. And I like to remind people that financial insecurity in retirement doesn't mean you're not going to be able to afford buying, you know, a birthday present for your grandkid. What it means is you're not going to be able to keep the lights on. You won't be able to afford prescription drugs or pay your rent. And so what that says to me is that we still have a huge gap in terms of personal savings, and figuring out one's own pocketbook.
When we're looking at this, and again, we're talking with Sarah Gill. She's the senior legislative representative with AARP. Right at this point, we're talking about trends in terms of what's going on nationally in legislation. We've talked a little bit about the retirement part, the 401k and all the aspects that go with that. Talk to us a little about some of the trends you're seeing in regards to employees in general and when they're getting ready to get into their senior year, some of the challenges they face maybe on the benefit side like medical or some of the other aspects that are out there.
Absolutely. I think that near retirees really have a lot of very complicated questions. The most frequent question I get is, really, have I saved enough? And most people feel like they haven't, and they're not wrong. So the question is it too late to start saving for retirement in my 50s? And although it's certainly much more advantageous to start in your 20s and 30s, we really feel like it's never too late. And part of the reason is because there's a little known quirk about Social Security, which is that if you wait to take Social Security until your full retirement age, which obviously depends on what year you're born, but let's say your full retirement age is 65, but you can start claiming at 62. The problem is, if you claim early, you claim Social Security early, they're going to lower your benefit. And it's not just for those couple of years. It's for your entire life. And so if you wait till 65 or even beyond that, what that means is you get an extra 8% in benefits in dollars that you can't outlive. And that lasts forever. That lasts for the rest of your life. So if you're in your 50s and you're thinking, geez, why should I even start saving more for retirement right now? I can't amass the $1 million that I need. The good news is you may not have to. There are small changes that you can make that will make a huge difference to your lifetime financial security. The other piece that you mentioned I think is really, really important, and that's healthcare. All the big numbers that you hear out there in terms of how much money you might need to save for retirement generally don't take into account the cost of healthcare or even long-term care. And a lot of Americans throughout the country wind up relying on social safety net programs like Medicaid because they haven't actually thought about what they're going to do for healthcare. So I would encourage anyone who's going to talk to a financial planner, don't just talk about your current day-to-day expenses. You know, how much is your rent? How much is your utility bill? Talk about what you think you're going to need to spend in healthcare. Talk about, you know, what your spouse, how their health is, and how much you're going to have to spend with them. Really think that through, because it's a very important question.
And that's probably one of the biggest challenges, that is that unknown, what you're going to actually potentially spend in healthcare, prescriptions, or any other aspects. And you have couples. And, you know, one of the other things that I would add is that, as you know, you see more and more people that are getting ready towards retirement still taking care of young families and taking care of what we call the sandwich generation. You know, they're taking mm-hmm. care of their senior parents, and they're also taking care of their younger children, and maybe even the grandchildren or their nieces and nephews, because that seems to be where the trends are going. Is there any legislation on the horizon? Is there anything that is being looked at from the AARP standpoint that may help or push forward some avenues to help individuals with these types of issues?
There definitely is. A lot of states are now considering one thing called a caregiver tax credit, which basically means if you are in the sandwich generation, right, that you might be able to get a little tax relief because you're spending so much of your time helping either your parents or your children. And I think that, you know, people wind up taking days off of work, or even a lot of times women wind up putting their jobs all together just so that they can take care of family members. So what we've seen, the trend is that the word, quote unquote, caregiver is really taking off, both at the state and federal level. And people are starting to ask the question, is this a sustainable model that we have throughout the country in terms of caregiving? And what can we do to help these caregivers sort of rest, rejuvenate, and be financially secure?
And I think that aspect is true. You know, it is a huge cost and expense. I certainly know I've gone through it with my parents. My wife has done the same, and, you know, children as well to deal with that. So it is a real live issue that is facing just about all families. And it's one of those challenges that I see that probably doesn't get enough, if we want to call it press, in terms of, you know, really seeing, because it isn't glamorous, it isn't sexy to talk about that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, that seems to be where the trends are going. So you agree that's part of one of those trends that probably has more legs, and it should be talked about more.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we need to look at the multiple facets of healthcare and providing for our loved ones.
We're talking with Sarah Gill. She's a senior legislative representative of AARP. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner, in store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. We're talking with Sarah Gill. She's the Senior Legislative Representative with the AARP. Sarah, you know, I got to tell you a funny story. This is just a quick anecdote. It's always one of those things. And whenever I get AARP on the show, I tell them this story. So I may have turned 50 a few years ago. Well, just
maybe
that happened. At least not in my mind. I'm still five, but we'll stick with that. Okay. You know, that first number is all that matters. The rest is just, you know, just part of it is. So as a what you would call a fun gift, my son signed me up for the AARP automatically. I didn't sign up. He filled out all the form and information online for me. So I get in the mail. You know where this is going, don't you?
I do.
Right? And so I get in the mail this very nice welcome packet. Now, Sarah, I love the organization. But when you turn 50, you immediately in your brain say, I'm not quite ready for that yet, right? Maybe let's be clear. There's this moment.
I hear that quite a bit.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So after I opened it all, I want you to know that I had this extreme pleasure of shredding it all in the shredder. Everything. The card, the paperwork, the stickers, it all went through the shredder.
I'll have to make sure I get you another copy.
Well, no, don't worry, because I'm happy to report they kept coming. And it's not a problem, just saying. It's just one of those funny stories. I've disinherited my son, but that's fine. He'll understand some way later. But
someday he'll make someday it to 50 and he'll return the favor.
Someday he'll understand and yeah. So anyways, isn't that funny? It's just one of those great stories.
That is funny.
It's one of those things. But anyways, we're talking about, obviously, legislation. Maybe they should be legislating, preventing somebody else filling out and harassing you. No, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying about that. So I think one of the things I know we want to talk about today, and I want to get a little bit more granular as we talk to about the state of Maine. Because in this particular case, I know that's one of the areas that is a hotbed in terms of one of the issues that's coming up. So why don't you tell us a little about some general retirement security issues that are going on here in the state of Maine. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, some of the working and saving issues in terms of what's happening. And I think maybe that will give us a lead into the legislation that's coming up here in the state of Maine.
Sure. So in Maine, we have roughly 234,000 workers that go to work every day, do the right thing, you know, pay their bills, pay their taxes, but have no way to save for retirement out of their regular paycheck. No way to save. So their employer doesn't offer a 401k or, you know, an old school pension or even an IRA. They're kind of up a creek. And that constitutes about half the population, half the private sector workers in the state of Maine.
So why is that? I don't mean to interrupt, but why is that? Because I know, as well as you do, that Maine is a rural state. There's only 1.3 million people in the state. Most of it, 83% of the state, is small family businesses. I can count on one hand, maybe if I add a finger or two, all the large, massive, you know, corporations. So is that part of the problem, or is there just a lack of education and knowledge?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So across the state of Maine, there are about 61,000 people that work for businesses with fewer than 10 employees. And that constitutes about 80%. 80% of them constitute people who can't save for retirement. So only 20% of people who work for really small businesses are able to do that. So one of the most likely factors that impacts whether or not a person can save for work, save for retirement at work, is the size of that business. And Maine has far more small businesses than most other states.
This is not, though, a problem in just Maine, correct? I mean, I certainly know that it may be a big problem here in the state, but there are other states with, you know, small or low-income areas. You know, am I correct?
Hands down, this is a problem across the country. In fact, when you extrapolate out all the people across the country who are not able to save for retirement at work, you get 55 million workers. Same statistics, roughly one out of every two private sector workers. And it's because of small business, but there are also a few reasons why people aren't able to save for retirement at work. And there's a couple of factors I think won't surprise people. You're less likely to have a way to save for retirement if you are a millennial, because they're more likely to have sort of those quote-unquote gig work jobs. So they're contractual, right? They go from small job to small job, and they don't necessarily stay in one place like their parents or grandparents did. And if you are lower income or have less education, you're less likely to be in a job that offers a 401k or an IRA at work. But the number one reason really is employer size, and I think that's intuitive, especially for the folks listening. So in terms of why small businesses don't do it, what we hear is that they really want to. There's no reason why they wouldn't offer a retirement plan. In fact, most small employers feel like their employees are their family. They feel kind of a responsibility towards them, but they're busy keeping their doors open. They don't have HR departments, and they don't know where to start. So if you're busy making sure that your inventory is getting refilled on a regular basis, you don't know if you should be calling, you know, 401k providers and what questions you should be asking.
And even in fact, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the times you're really looking at alternative to 401k. You might be looking at IRAs or SEPs or other types of retirement plans that maybe don't have the same institutional brand name or knowledge. And, you know, there might be different types of IRAs or other ways that organizations or companies can provide that. But again, they don't know the difference because 401ks, as you know, have such high levels of requirements sometimes that it becomes a challenge.
Yeah, I think that really sometimes employers are a little scared off by that. Not only being a fiduciary in a 401k process, but there's a lot of procedure, right, for setting up a 401k. You might have to hire a third-party administrator. You might have to hire a lawyer. It's not going to be free. And so I think those things kind of put employers off. And additionally, you're right, there are like a dozen different types of retirement plans that employers can choose from. But here's what I find to be the most fascinating. If you look at statistics since the 1970s, the number of people who can save for retirement at work hasn't budged. One out of every two workers since the 1970s. And I think that's fascinating because if you look back and you think about all the changes we've been through, the invention of the internet, the invention of all these other types of retirement vehicles like a Roth, there's all sorts of new retirement products out there, and yet none of them have been the silver bullet, making sure that people are saving for retirement. Because remember, I mean, where we started today was that about one out of every two households is at risk for financially insecure retirement. So what we are seeing throughout the country is that the system we have right now just isn't working.
So let me ask just a clarifying question on that, if I could. You said, obviously, I get the statistics, I understand that. Is there a level of understanding of where somebody needs to be financially, on average, to be financially secured? Isn't there a factor between spending as well as lifestyle that has a factor to that? Or how does the AARP judge that measure?
Absolutely. There's a huge part of this, which is personal responsibility and personal budgeting. And so people taking control of their financial future is really, really important. And the numbers in terms of financial security vary depending on who you're talking to, especially with regards to healthcare, like we discussed earlier. But you might need as much as 10 to 15 times your final salary to be able to retire kind of comfortably. So if you're thinking about it, and I know these are high numbers, but they're easy numbers to comprehend. If you've got $100,000 in terms of salary when you're retiring at 65, you might need $1 million or $1.5 million before we even start talking about healthcare in order to comfortably retire.
Yeah, I've heard statistics, people talking about having $1 million in retirement on average, assuming that there's a 4% return on your money, and that's probably a pretty good, decent average number. You're talking about $40,000 a year of income that you can get for X number of years out of that. And I don't know, do you use those same type of terms and philosophies in terms of the statistics?
Yeah, absolutely. We do use those same types of statistics, but I think they really wind up scaring people a lot of times. So, someone will say, oh, you do retirement? Oh, gosh, I can't even, I'm too nervous to even have you look at my numbers, right, at how much I have in my 401k. So the funny thing is, people do make these decisions, sort of gut decisions rather than with information, and that is part of the issue. But the bigger issue is really behavioral economics, which is really just a fancy word for making sure that these retirement plans use tools that we know drive behavior. So, for instance, opting in or opting out, or making sure that the default investments in retirement plans are really good, because we know people aren't going to move out of those defaults.
Well, they certainly, it's better if they are automatically opting in, because they have at least a chance of actually having the money taken out. Because I know as well as you do, you will find other things to purchase. You will find other things to deal with. And, people aren't always, unfortunately, financially savvy. And I'm sure you'll also agree that, unfortunately, we don't teach this well enough in schools or in universities to make sure that people truly understand the value of money.
I think that's absolutely true, and especially it's true about people finding other things to do with their time. You know, in the industry, we call it inertia. Inertia really works against us. So if you are a new employee, you're just starting this new job, they hand you a huge packet of information, and you're just trying to get out of the door at 5 o'clock to pick up your kid from soccer practice, are you going to take that first day, the time, to really look at those data points about all the types of investments that you could make with your money? No, you're going to put it off till next week or next month. You know, I'm a retirement expert, and I might do that too. So the interesting stat here is that if people opt out, so if on day one you start at Bob's Forest and you're in the retirement plan, unless you choose not to be, you're 15 times more likely to save for retirement. That's huge. And we didn't do anything other than change who's in the plan on day one.
Employers might say, well, hey, how can I force them to do that? Is there something I need to do to make sure that that's set up that way? I assume they have to talk to their plan representatives to do so.
They do. So actually, this is becoming industry best practice. Over the last 10 to 15 years, large employers, so we're talking the ones with, you know, more than 100 employees, are starting to use automatic enrollment more and more regularly, particularly with their 401k plans, because we know it's so much more efficient. You know, I often get the question, what happens, why should I do this as an employer? If my workers wanted to save for retirement, they could just go down the block to their local bank and open up an IRA. And absolutely, people could, and some do. But what we know is, if you can't save for retirement at work, only 5% of those people are going to go out on their own and open up an IRA. So if that's 5% of the 234,000 workers across the state of Maine who are going to take the initiative and go open their own retirement plan. And we can do much better than that.
I think that's not even a question. I think this is one of those cases where education becomes critical. And I know then the next segment here, we're going to be talking about a work and save plan that is a part of the main legislative agenda and something that the AARP is truly supporting. So when we come back, we're going to have that conversation. Again, we're talking with Sarah Gill, Senior Legislative Representative with the AARP. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Oh! Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
In a recent survey, investors shared what they felt were the greatest threats to their retirement. It's no surprise the most common threats include stock market volatility, economic uncertainty, conflict in the Middle East, the 2020 presidential impeachment and election. Unfortunately, there are many threats beyond your control that can affect your retirement savings. At Goldco, a leader in precious metals, the team believes one way to protect your investment portfolio is with physical gold and silver. Goldco has helped thousands of investors safeguard their retirement, especially in times of uncertainty. In fact, if you call 855-971-2006, Goldco will send you a free 1 ounce silver American Eagle coin. And all you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. No obligation, 100% free. Call 855-971-2006 to get your free silver American Eagle coin. That's 855-971-2006.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. And today we're talking with Sarah Gill. She is a senior legislative representative with AARP. You know, Sarah, it did just occur to me. Should really you have the word senior and AARP in the same sentence with your title? I'm just asking that question.
it does seem to be counter to our whole disrupt aging theory, doesn't it?
It does really go against the AARP model. I think you need to go get your title changed to...
I know, especially as a millennial, right?
That's exactly right. Maybe it should be Empress of Legislative...
I like it. If you can call my boss, I'd appreciate it.
I'll get right on it. Maybe when he hears the show or she hears the show.
Maybe.
Then they'll go, no. So anyways, it's all good. Sarah, you know, we're talking about the state of Maine. We're actually talking about, of course, legislation that's affecting retirement and all of the statistics that we talked about last segment of the challenge of people that are out there that are just not able to provide enough income to retire. And they work for typically small companies. So I know in the state of Maine and other states, which I know you have statistics on, they're talking about passing a work and save plan. I think it would be great if you could start out with what exactly is that?
Sure. So a work and save plan, it goes by many names. That's just one of the kind of catchphrases. But it also generally can be referred to as kind of an automatic IRA plan program. So let's take, for instance, I think Illinois is pretty easy to understand. So let's kind of think about what that looks like there. They have a program that's up and running, where if you are a business in the state of Illinois and you've been around for 2 years or more, you haven't offered your workers a way to save for retirement in those 2 years, and you have 25 or more employees, the rule in the state of Illinois is you have to offer your workers a way to save out of their regular paycheck. It doesn't have to be the state program. It can be a 401k, it can be a SEP, it can be an IRA, it can be whatever you want. The employer is in the driver's seat. but your workers just have to be able to save for retirement easily out of their regular paycheck. Now, to make that easier for small businesses or for businesses at large, the state sets up this kind of backup plug-and-play IRA that small business owners don't have to pay for and don't have to run. You can kind of think of it like a college savings plan, like a 529 plan, but for retirement. So the state brings together all these small businesses who otherwise probably wouldn't be kind of clients of these big 401k providers because they don't have a lot of money and they don't have a lot of time. And they do the negotiating with the private sector. So the private sector still manages all this money. It's all professionally invested. But the state is kind of overseeing it and making it easier for small business owners.
So some of the basic questions that come up for this. First of all, understand that it's a state-run plan. Who runs it from the state?
That varies greatly state to state, but if you want to talk about kind of the way Maine is talking about looking at it, that's in LB 594, which is sponsored by Senator Vitale. There's going to be a board which has both private sector members who represent sort of industry, the best of the industry. So retirement security experts, people that speak for employers, people that speak for employees, and then also sort of people who are already in government. So whether that's the treasurer or Maine PERS, the retirement system, those additional pieces are going to be in place. So you're going to have a broad basis of experience to work off of, and those people are going to oversee the operation of the program.
You talked about the fact that there's no necessarily cost in the employer, but typically these plans come with matching funds. Does the employer still have to provide matching funds to the employee?
So in the case of an automatic IRA or a work and save program, the answer to that is no. There is no employer fee, and the employers cannot contribute. The reason is because these programs are IRAs, individual retirement accounts. They're not employer-sponsored plans. So in a 401k, the employer can choose to actually contribute if they want to, and in other plans, like a SEP, there's required contributions for the employer. But that's not the case here, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, this will not work if it's not easy and cost-effective for employers. That's our number one focus. So we want to make sure that employers are not paying for an automatic IRA program, and they're not here. What the fees are coming out of the investments that are being contributed by the employees. The other reason is really because these are intended to be starter plans, right? They're not intended to usurp or take the place of your existing 401k. In fact, if you offer a 401k, this program has nothing to do with you. Keep doing you. But in this instance, we want to make sure that people just have kind of the starter kit for retirement that's easy, efficient, and really cost-effective for employers.
So that brought up the question that I was going to ask in terms of if somebody has a 401k, an employer has made a decision that they obviously give X percent, let's say 3% for sake of argument, and they see that the state plan has come out and there's no fee to them. What prevents them from determining to end the 401k plan and put them on the state plan, which then allows the employee to still provide the information in terms of the money into the plan but saves the employer money?
Most states, including the main draft, explicitly say that employers can't offload their existing plans, and that makes intuitive sense. If you're already doing the right thing, offering a retirement plan, and it's up and running, you should keep doing that, especially if it has the bells and whistles of a 401k in comparison. Because think about it, right? A 401k has a $19,000 contribution limit, whereas an IRA has a $6,500 contribution limit. So you're going to be able to attract and retain better employees with these better plans. But what we want to make sure is that employers who don't currently offer something because, you know, they've got 10 employees and they're keeping their doors open, have a way to do that and attract and retain good employees too. And frankly, to remain competitive in the region. When you're looking at the East Coast, you've got states like Massachusetts, Vermont, New Jersey, New York. They're all getting these programs up and running. So if Maine doesn't do it, the concern is that businesses, especially small businesses, they're not going to be able to recruit and retain employees that they want and need.
Currently, you said there are other states that are doing this. What states are doing and how has it been successful? What are the rates of return? And what examples can you provide for people who are saying, well, it sounds good, but is this something new or tried and true?
So there's about 10 states that have programs passed in legislation, and a handful are already up and running. And I love this issue because I can actually point to real data and real examples of people who have saved for retirement, and that's pretty unusual when you do state politics. It tends to be very theoretical in state politics, but this we have real data on. So I think the best example is Oregon. They've been up and running for more than 2 years, and the most recent numbers for their automatic IRA are that there's more than 66,000 people across the state of Oregon saving for retirement today because of Work and Save, because of their automatic IRA. And the interesting thing is that the vast majority of those people never saved for retirement before. So they're mostly brand new savers. And over the last 2 years, $42 million has been saved for retirement. Now, that might not sound like a lot of money, but think about it, because those dollars came in small chunks. The average amount of money a person is putting away on a regular basis is $128 a month. That represents about 5.5% of a person's paycheck. So what's really exciting here is not just that they're new savers, but they're small dollars that are going to build up to big numbers very quickly. The same is true in Illinois, where they've been about a year so far up and running, and people are saving more than $3 million a month in total. So that has added up to more than $14 million so far and 51,000 accounts. So what's really exciting here is that we know that this works. It's kind of, if you forgive the joke, it's kind of, if you build it, they will come. We know that if we build this in the state of Maine, people will use it. It's just a matter of getting the legislation over the finish line.
So obviously the legislation is that the state will initially have some sort of loan or some sort of funding to start the program, because obviously nothing's free. So what are we talking about in terms of an investment by the state of Maine in terms of either bonds or cash?
That's exactly how it works. So we don't actually have a fiscal impact note yet, I don't think, for the bill from Maine. But what we know is that the cost of these programs is going down the more states that are up and running. So, for instance, I actually sit on the Maryland Retirement Security Board. We're getting the program up and running there, and we've only spent, I think we've spent between $2 and $4 million, depending on the time horizon you're looking at. And again, all of that money, or excuse me, we've been appropriated that much money, we haven't spent it all. And what we know is that these dollars are going to be paid back over time. These are loans, as you mentioned. So there really isn't a long-term output. It's not like money that's just thrown out the door. This all gets paid back into the general revenue fund at the end of the day. And we know that works because in Oregon, as I mentioned, they've been up and running for 2 years, and they're officially self-sufficient. So they haven't paid back their loan yet, but they're not taking any more state dollars in as little as 2 years. And here's the flip side of that. Because it sounds like, right, it's going to sound like a lot of money, but what we know is that if you don't take action today, we will pay money down the line as taxpayers. So in the state of Maine, taxpayers could save as much as $23 million between now and 2032 by taking action today, by helping people save just $1,000 extra a year for retirement. $23 million in the state budget. Just by helping people save their own money for retirement. There are very few programs out there that have such a good return on investment.
We're talking with Sarah Gill, Senior Legislative Representative with the AARP. We're talking about LD 594 here in the state of Maine. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, you know, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Shulo, and today we're talking with Sarah Gill, who has done a really good job as the senior, in quotes, legislative representative with AARP. I know we're teasing you, Sarah, but it's okay. We're trying to get you the new title that you well deserve at the AARP.
Empress.
Okay. Empress. Empress of Legislation. Yeah, that's the new title we're going to give you. And if you come back on, which we hope you do, we will start using that as the title, so we'll just get it going, okay?
It's all good. I love it.
All right, all good. So we've been talking about here in the state of Maine this new discussion having to do with what is commonly called work and save plans, specifically a bill called LD 594. And we talked about it in the last segment, and it's really about a plan that is created by the state of Maine. It's an IRA plan that employees can pay into out of their employee wages, and it's controlled by the state, and it is kind of like a retirement plan. It is a retirement plan by the state. There are two questions that come up. One is, how do people get their money out? Is it the same as normal? And then the second part of the question is, okay, it's a state plan, and God, I love all states so much that I absolutely trust that they would never touch that money. So in their general fund. So convince me of both those issues.
Sure. So as to the first question about how to get your money out, it's really important to remember that the employee, the worker, is always in the driver's seat. So from day one, they decide if they want to save in this vehicle, in this retirement plan, how much they want to save, and where they want to put their money, what the investment is. And at the end of the day, they also decide how they want to take it out. So there's the normal IRA option, like a lump sum. You can take out chunks of money as you need it. But you also, the bill contemplates, LD 594 contemplates a way to take that out in reliable checks on a monthly basis, just like Social Security might be. So there's going to be a lot of different options for individuals, but what they need to know is that they're going to be in the driver's seat and they're going to control it. That carries over into your second question, which is, this is money that is belongs to the individual, full stop. The state can't touch it. Employers can't touch it. It's held in trust for the individual. And that's under federal law, because these are IRAs. So all the same federal laws that apply to IRAs apply to this program. So that cap we were talking about earlier on employee contributions of $6,500, same cap set under the federal government, and the employee owns it. So that's really important. The other piece I think is important to your listeners is that employers are not on the hook either. So it's explicit in the main bill that employers are not responsible for gains and losses. They're not responsible for employees' decision to participate or not. And they're not responsible for the operation and administration of the program by the state government. So really, they're not on the hook, and the employee is in the driver's seat.
So you mentioned that the fact that this is something that's their asset. So number one, it could be lost in terms of like any IRA. You could have an investment that could crash or other areas. So it's not protected like a Social Security or something like that in terms of it's not a guaranteed income. Is that correct?
It is not a guaranteed income. It's exactly like a 401k. So what you put in the account is what you get out, minus gains and losses. And the employee decides, do you want to be in something conservative like a bond fund, or do you want to be in a target date fund, which basically just says, we're going to contemplate what your investment should be based on your projected retirement age.
And the second question on that is if somebody should have a life event where they pass away, that is part of their assets and can be then taken out by a family member the same way it would be in regards to a 401k or an IRA.
Absolutely. It works just like a regular IRA. And additionally, if you have a life event like you lose a job or you find a new job, these accounts are portable and they go with the worker.
Excellent. You know, I think you have done, Sarah, a great job today of explaining this new bill, LD 594, which clearly the AARP supports. How can people get involved? How can companies or organizations who want to know more, other than obviously they can go to HRPowerHour.com right after this show and click on your link and information, but where can they go directly?
Sure. So the first thing I'll tell folks is that they really should call their state legislator. If you think this is important and you want legislators to take action and make it easier for small businesses to offer a retirement plan, definitely pick up the phone because they're going to listen to you as either an HR professional or a small business owner yourself much more than they'll listen to me or an individual. So that's really, really important. And I'll also say you should get in touch with AARP Maine and AARP at large. We're happy to help connect you if you don't know who your legislator is or you just want to know more about the bill.
Sarah, it has been awesome speaking with you today. You've done a great job. We appreciate it. Again, it's Sarah Gill, Senior Legislative Representative with AARP, and we've been talking about the Work and Save program here, or the legislation here in Maine. We hope you come back soon.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back with the HR Tip of the Week. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
You want me to sign a non-compete? Forget about it. Hi, this is Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. Non-compete agreements are under attack. States like Maine have prohibited non-compete agreements for all employees who make under a certain level of income. In Maine, it's 400% of the federal poverty level for an individual, or about $50,000 per year. Even if you have an employee who makes more than that, in order to enforce the non-compete, you must first disclose it ahead of time that this job requires a non-compete. And even then, the employee must be with the company for an entire year before the non-compete can be legally binding. Now, the rules are different for people who are already employed, but nevertheless, it can get a little confusing. Got a question about whether non-competes are enforceable? Call Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.